people all across the state of Georgia to come together and kind of meet each other and maybe start meetings, maybe just, you know, get together for, you know, once or twice in their lifetimes and work on a project or something. But it's called the Georgia Underground Computer Users Society, and the temporary domain is gucus.net.pc.
Looking at it, it looks very, very interesting. Yeah. It's pretty damn interesting there, Cody Boy. If I don't recall, I mentioned something like that back to you back a couple months ago, if I'm not mistaken.
You may have, I don't know, but I'm taking credit for it, so.
You're a bastard. Burn in hell, you bastard. Jesus.
You know, if you live in Georgia, or, you know, you happen to have a friend online or something that lives in Georgia that's interested in hacking, tell them about the site, you know, drop them a link, because the more people we have on the site, the more chances there is going to be for communities throughout the state to kind of grow and just be more prosperous in general, and that's what the whole point of the site is about, so.
Right on.
And, this one I'm excited about, too. I was reading in the back of, there's a magazine based in, I want to say California, called Blacklisted 411. And in the back, they have all sorts of meetings and stuff listed. And I was looking in the back of the newest issue, and I happened to come across a meeting, a Blacklist 411 meeting in Snellville, Georgia, which is probably about 30-45 minutes outside of Atlanta. But they don't have a website yet, so I can't really link you to it. But the meetings are held at I believe it's the Borders Bookstore on Scenic Highway at 8 o'clock. So, you know, if you're within convenient driving area, first Saturday of every month, go check it out, you know, because they're just starting out, they're having their first meeting, this Saturday, actually, so check it out, you know, if you like it, come back to the next one, if you don't, you know, find something else to do.
Right on, I have to check it out, it's only like about 10 minutes away from me, 10, 15 minutes away from me.
Yeah, I think it could prove to be a fairly exciting meeting, just kind of meeting new people that I don't already know, you know?
Well, aren't you Mr. Popular?
Yeah, I am. I'm a scene whore.
Scene guy. Suck you and all your scene whoreness. And then again, you sound like you stole that from one of the emo dealers, by the way. Not saying anything bad about him, you know, I do listen to some of the music. But I'm more into hardcore, so Bastard can kiss my ass. Anyway. No, but I'll definitely check it out. What did you say the first meeting was?
Saturday, the whatever date that Saturday coming up is. Let me find that out real quick.
That would be
December 3rd. There we go. So Saturday, December 3rd, 8 o'clock at Borders Books on Scenic Highway. Check it out. I'll probably be there if I can. I'll have to kind of work my schedule at work to maybe get off in time to go. But
I will definitely try to go, and if you can't make a phone call, I'll definitely try to be there, and I'll let you know how it turns out. Alright. Speaking of keeping in touch with people, you know how Google's always data testing everything. They have Google Earth, Google is the messenger, Google everything, right? Well, now you can have the convenience of clicking to call the advertiser on the webpage, right? So next to, you know, an advertiser or something like that. You enter your phone number, and once you click the connect for free, you'll call the number that you put in. When you pick up, you know, you'll hear the ringing on the other end, and Google will connect you to the advertiser free of charge. Like, they put the bill and everything. The only thing that will cost you is if you give them a cell phone number, it will take your airtime. But other than that, it doesn't cost you any money, and they supposedly block your number from showing up to the advertiser so they can't get it and call you back or whatever. But they do keep it in a database for a short period of time, and then they finally delete it. You know, and that's about it. I mean, I don't really see why I would ever need to do that, but that's not to say somebody else might not find a use for it, you know.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that that in order to kind of work this service out, that Google, I don't know if this is true, as far as I know it's just a rumor, but Google teamed up with, I believe it was Time Warner Telecommunications, and so people were kind of theorizing, and I think that this is, you know, with following the trend that Google has been going on of kind of moving in and taking over little pieces of every market until it owns everything. I'm kind of seeing that if they did team up with Time Warner Telecom to get this service running, it's, you know, I think Google may in the future be offering some form of maybe not free, but at least inexpensive VoIP service like Skype would be, possibly, or just something that, you know, maybe a web-based thing where you can just go through the site and call whatever number it is you want.
Maybe. I think one day Google will own the world, but, you know, whatever. Hopefully I'll be dead by then. Moving on. You know, speaking otherwise of, you know, connecting to people over businesses, as I said, have you ever wanted to watch TV when you're not at your house, Pony Boy?
Actually, no.
You won't either of us, but because I don't watch TV. But it would still be cool nonetheless, right?
Yeah.
If you're a TV junkie or something like that. Well, Sony's come up with this thing called location-free TV. Basically what it is you have a base station that you set up at your house or whatever, and say you get have a PSP or a laptop or something, and as long as you have an internet connection, you just go to a Wi-Fi spot, you know, use your base station, because the way it is, the base station connects to, you know, your TV or your satellite set-top box or, you know, something like that, right? Well, if it does that, and then you just go to a Wi-Fi connection or something, you know, some broadband internet connection, go up to it, put in information, and you can stream TV from your whatever is running at your house to your laptop or PSP, which I think is really cool. I mean, the laptop, you know, it's pretty, you know, cool and all, but I think the really awesome thing is being able to do it on your PSP. Now that is, like, actually really, really cool.
Well, I think that more or less it's going to be used primarily for porn, because that's just what everything that we ever talk about on the show revolves around.
It's porn.
But, I mean, if you think about it, it really is designed for watching porn on, because you can just leave your TV on at your house. Like, let's say, you know, you actually shell out the cash to get one of those awesome, you know, porn channels that they offer on the TV these days. And, I mean, you just go anywhere you're at. You know, you're like, man, I feel like looking at some porn. Let me just, you know, whip out my PSP, pretend like I'm playing a game for a little while or something. And then, you know, I'll sit here and look at some titties.
You know, that's that's basically it. I mean, what the hell, what other use is good for the video iPod? Porn. What's the use for locating 3 TV by Sony? Porn.
Well, I mean, that's what the use of TV is, as far as I'm concerned.
A computer, for that matter. Everything else is just a clever facade. Computer, that's the porn, man.
Yeah. Well, see, ladies and gentlemen, the internet was made for porn. That's why the internet exists, and that's what holds the internet together. Pornography, and this is going to sound a little gross, but pornography is the sticky substance that holds the internet together. But here at Velcro Radio, we're not about pornography. You see?
Oh, no. Wholesome banging entertainment.
See, pornography is just the glue. Pornography is the super glue that holds your little brother to the wall, let's say. But here at Velcro Radio, we're not about the super glue. We're about your little brother, and we're about the wall. We're about the interesting things, not the porn that makes it all stick together.
That
made no sense at all, but okay.
That was beautiful, even though it made no sense. It was beautiful, funny boy. Such lovely, lovely words that bring the tear to my eye. Oh my god, I think we're on crack or something. I don't even know. Jesus Christ.
I think that's going to be our new slogan. Velcro Radio, we're about your little brother and a wall.
Not the porn. Oh my god. Oh, what is wrong with us?
I don't know. But moving on. The great state of California. You know, everybody loves California. All the great stuff in the world comes from California.
Such as porn.
Exactly. And grapes, or whatever the hell they have in California. Avocados. But, the California Secretary of State has invited a little group called, I mean, you guys may be familiar with it. They've done it for other states in the past. A group called Black Box Voting, which is basically they do like penetration testing on systems set up for voters to use to vote on voting systems, you might say. And they invited these people to come to California to test out these new Diebold voting machines that they came up with. And it's pretty cool stuff. I mean, I personally, as far as being a hacker goes, you don't really think about, you know, hacking a voting machine. But when you come down to it, that's really what it is. A voting machine is just a computer, and you can hack it just the same as you can hack any other computer. Even more so because you actually have more or less physical access to the computer itself.
Yeah, you know, that is very true. But again, I don't care about politics. I can care less about politics. As a matter of fact, I do care less about politics. But as much as I love computers, I'm not sure if, you know, if I was really, really into politics, I'm not sure exactly if I would trust my voting left to be on a computer, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because unless they can prove for definite sure that, I mean, I know nothing's like all computer systems, you're going to be, you know, they're all, quote-unquote, hackable, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, unless they can show me that it's extremely, extremely, extremely hard to do, then I'm not going to trust doing voting. Because, I mean, if you're really into it and you really don't like somebody or somebody's really bad, they can just go in there and change all of those around and, you know, fuck it all up bad.
mean, I think that's kind of, it's not so much that these guys, they don't just come in and hack it and say, look, we hacked it, you know. I mean, they come in and they test the security of it, and then they know how the system works, and so they would know how to fix the flaws in it, and they help the people secure it better. And I mean, a lot of it has to do more so with gaining access to the machine in order to do things, because the machines don't have, you know, they don't have a keyboard on there, really, that you can use to input data in that way. And the computers themselves are generally in a locked box of some sort that you can't really get to unless you know, pick the lock and open it up, which isn't, you know, I know, and you know, I'm sure most of our listeners have, you know, tried lock picking at one point in time. It's not that hard, you know?
Yeah.
Just, you know, picking the lock real quick. And I mean, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the final episode of Radio Freak America featured a little audio from a news coverage about this same group doing this kind of thing in a different city somewhere. And I mean, that was what the basis of what they did revolved around, was actually getting inside that box and getting to the machine. And I think they used like one of the flexible keyboards that they kind of just rolled up and stuck in their sleeves so they could just walk in with it if they felt like, and, you know, and just gain access to the machine and plug the keyboard in, and you're basically there. You basically have control of the computer. You can type in any commands you want after that, you know?
Yeah.
And I can agree with what you're saying totally, that this makes me less likely to trust a voting machine in general, but I think that's also the point of the group. They want you to realize that there are inherent flaws in the systems that we use for really important and confidential things.
Exactly. And I, for one, not until, you know, we can be sure that it's going to be extremely difficult for someone to go in here and, like, fuck with stuff, that I think it should just use an old-fashioned layout, especially with something this major, you know? I mean, this is like deciding like on who could be the president of the United States or who could be governor or whatever like that, you know? That's kind of a major thing for most people. So, I don't know. Whatever, you know, whatever they want to do, I'm not big into politics, so I don't really care. So, whatever.
But I think that regardless of if you are into it and choose to vote, it doesn't make it any less vulnerable, you know? Because if you don't vote, your vote wouldn't count then because it wasn't issued. So therefore, all the other votes that they do have access to and could change, it would still weigh out exactly the same, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool of the state of California to actually turn to people, like, to turn to hackers and say, alright, we realized, I mean, because, you know, personally, I would not have expected that from a state government to say, okay, so we realize that you guys are good hackers, and you're not trying to be evil, so why don't you come help us? And I think it's cool that they actually acknowledge the fact that there are hackers in the world who aren't out to fuck stuff up, you know?
Yeah, that is pretty amazing, though. They've actually hired somebody like that, and actually, you know, was not like afraid of what would happen, anything like that, you know? That's pretty cool. I have to give them credit on that. Good job, California. Good job.
Speaking of California, and this is completely unrelated to voting, but it's a cool thing that that some scientists in San Francisco have come up with. They engineered some bacteria. I think it was E. coli bacteria or something, to where they engineered it to some of them, if you shine a light on them, they will turn black. And some of them, if you shine a light on them, they won't turn black. So what they did was they arranged them on, like, a petri dish and shined a light through it to make pictures with these little bacteria. And I thought it was really cool. I mean, the image that they have as an example, I saw this on brainblog.com, I think it was, but the image that they have as an example was the scientists made a little picture of the infamous flying spaghetti monster. Which, I mean, I guess that just goes to show you how good of a sense of humor scientists have. You know, they could have made a picture of anything, and they chose a fictional character. Oh, I'm not going to say a fictional character, because, you know, the Pastafarians will come after me. But an internet-based religious icon made of noodles.
That is pretty amazing, yeah. That they can make pictures out of living things.
I mean,
don't know exactly what purpose that'll ever serve, but nonetheless, it's still pretty awesome.
It's still a cool thing, regardless of whether or not it actually proves useful ever. But I think that's kind of 50% of what science is. It's just, hey, look at this cool thing we did. Now let's put it in the closet and go do something else that's going to just go sit in the closet next to it when we're done.
That's so true. Like, how much of the stuff that scientists made that is actually used compared to how much of the stuff that they don't use, and it was like, hey, that's really awesome, and then you never hear really about it ever again. Yeah. Yeah. Moving on to an unrelated subject. The Bare Naked Ladies, I don't know if any people remember this band, because the only big stuff they had out that I recall was that one CD that I can't even remember the name of now.
Yeah, it was like late 90s, but...
Yeah. You know, I never really heard anything from them again, and that was back in the day. But, you know, this is really cool what they're doing. They decided to, instead of distributing their new album on a CD or DVD or download or something like that, they're putting it on a USB flash drive. And this is a quote from news source or SeattlePI.com. Network music group released Bare Naked Lady on a stick beginning today, says the Hollywood Reporter. It plays on PCs, Macs, and any other audio product with USB support, like some car stereos, and it costs $30. But what it has on it is contains 29 songs, including the band's 2004 Bare Naked Lady for the Holidays album, in MP3 format. It has live tracks, and album art photos, and the videos, and stuff like that. I just think it's really cool that, you know, just artists, music artists and things like that are experimenting with different ways of distributing their music besides the, you know, standard CD and stuff like that. You know?
What I think is really cool about what they're doing is, it's not just like, here's this flash drive and all it can ever be used for is these songs. It's a reusable flash drive. I mean, you can take the songs and take them right off the flash drive, put them on your computer or whatever, and then just use the flash drive for whatever you want after that. which I think, I mean, as far as, you know, $30 for a pretty nice, I think it was 128 megabytes, and then, I mean, and then, you know, probably a good hour and a half, 2 hours worth of music, for $30, not a bad deal, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it comes with a whole bunch of extra junk, like the photos, the music videos, and all that stuff, and, I mean, you can't really beat $30.
Yeah.
But I'm not into that type of music, but for everybody out there that is, I mean, hell, dude, you can't go wrong. Hell, I wouldn't even go and buy just for the flash drive.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that it's really creative for them to do that. I think that it, well, I don't think that it will, but I would be interested to see if this kind of concept would catch on to where other people would be distributing music that way. I think that might be kind of cool, but I'd have a whole lot of flash drives after that, so.
Yeah, right? that'd be crazy.
But, I guess, it's time for some ranting, and, the topic of this nice last section of our show is, Sony, and if nobody has read anywhere lately, and it's been all over Slashdot for about 2 weeks now.
Oh, you mean the fact that Sony's a bunch of dirty, backstabbing motherfuckers?
Yeah, Sony sucks. They're, well, except for their location-free TV. That's pretty cool. But Sony, the company, they're little bitches. And,
Well, Sony partnered with BGM Music.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all the same. But, well, for starters, and I'm gonna let, Black Mesa knows of another topic in this that I'm gonna let him go on in a second, but for starters, and this is what really pisses me off, is in order to, I guess, deter people from pirating software, or not software, but pirating music that was on these CDs that they were putting out, they installed secret rootkit software on the CDs, so that if you put it in your computer and tried to, like, rip off the music or something, they could fuck your computer up, basically. And they didn't tell anyone about this. They just put it on there, and they just, you know, they packaged those things up and shipped them out to all the stores, and fucked up a lot of people's computers in the process.
Well, that wasn't the only thing. The bigger thing was that it left, like, these gaping security holes that malicious quote-unquote hackers could use to, like, bypass firewalls and stuff like that. Which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, dude, what the hell, you know?
And then, of course, there was the MP3 encryption, or encoding, I should say. They used what was it?
It wasn't really so much their encoder, but it was like after they closely examined the rootkit that Sony was using to, you know, to keep people from copying the CDs and whatever. They looked really close to the code, and come to find out, it was infringing on the copyright of Lane Music Encoder, which anybody who's open source knows is under the GP or LGPL license. So, yeah, that kind of pissed a whole bunch of people off, and, you know.
Yeah, and of course they didn't give credit to the creators of the Lame encoding software.
Yeah, which is completely, you know, fine. Use it if you want. It's open source, but get credit where credit is due, you know? The guys worked hard on it, and there goes Sony, some big-ass corporation that has more money than it knows what to do with, using open source software and not giving credit to the people that deserve it.
And isn't it a part of the GPL, the actual license of it, that if you use a portion of GPL, of any software that's licensed with a GPL, you have to release your software with a GPL license as well?
Yeah, it's something like that. You know, I'm not sure of the, you know, specifics, but yeah, it's something like that. If you use part of the open source code, I think, you know, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure that you do have to release your whatever software you have under the GPL also.
Yeah, so, I mean, really, Sony was infringing on, technically, copyright. You know, they were committing a whole bunch of crimes, now that I think about it.
Exactly. Sony, a stupid bastard that needs to burn in hell.
And of course, since they decided to just go out with this project and not tell anyone about it, not you know, give anybody any warnings or anything, and a bunch of people's computers got nice and screwed up, there's been, you know, a huge impact on the record industry because of this. You know, I mean, what is it, BMG Music, or Sony BMG, I should say, is a huge, I want to say one of the first or second largest music labels. And I mean, when, you know, the impact that this had on it just blew away the record industry. I mean, they got so many complaints, so many people, you know, stopped purchasing music, because, you know, half the music in the world or whatever is made by Sony BMG. So I'm not sure they did it intentionally to hurt the record industry, but they were trying to avoid buying that specific kind of CD, so.
Well, I mean, it's just so stupid. This, like, set back the, you know, whole copyright thing back a couple of years, because now people are going to be afraid to do it. You know, other companies are going to be afraid to do it themselves, because they're going to be like, oh, God, what if this happens to us? You know?
Yeah.
So that completely set it back a couple of years right there, for the Sony to screw up.
Yeah.
And what makes it even more funny is the fact that now, like, I think it was Texas Attorney General is wanting to sue them, and which is going to set them back. You know, if this goes through, then they're going to be losing a hell of a lot more money than what they actually, you know, would have saved by, you know, keeping people or letting people copy the CDs.
And I mean, of course, the RIAA president is Terry Sherman is his name, I think. But he's standing behind Sony 100% because he's an idiot. And I mean, it seems like the record industry has gotten on this big crusade against anything that could possibly have to do with piracy. They're not stopping to realize that it's really not that big of a thing anymore, you know? Napster was a big thing in, like, 96. And then, I mean, like, all the little bits and pieces of every, you know, all the little Kazaa and WinMX and all the smaller peer-to-peer software that come after it. File sharing, as far as pirating, it's not really a big thing anymore. I mean, it still happens, but it's not having the huge impact like Napster was, you know?
Yeah.
Napster was a huge thing because it was the first, well, probably not the first, but the first to be spread around publicly, to where everyone in the country was aware of it. And they were aware that they could get this music for free, so they went there and they got it for free because they knew about it. But then they realized that, oh, well, they are going to sue us, so we shouldn't. And I think that that's not such a bad idea. But when you start doing shit like this, and you start, you know, putting stuff on CDs that will fuck someone's computer up just for putting it in a computer, that's when it's going way too far, you know?
Or, yeah. I mean, and another thing is that it would send, like, information about what people were doing with their music and things like that to Sony so they could tell what everybody was doing, you know, doing on their computer, which is, like, a complete invasion of privacy right there. I mean, what the hell? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I'm at a loss for words at how much this pisses me off. They do stuff like this.
And I know, since we're on a subject of this, and another thing that pisses me off is that the artist, because I have a friend that's really into this and everything, and he's in a band, and they're actually pretty big. It's a local band here, but a band called Colossic, right? And I was talking to him the other day about it, and we got on the topic of, you know, bands making money off of CDs, and he said that bands that, you know, when they buy CDs, they make less than, like, 10 cents a CD that they buy, because half of that profit goes to the retailer, you know, like Best Buy or whoever you're buying it from. 25% goes to the producer. The rest of it goes to the record company, and then all the stuff is like 10 cents that goes to the artist. The only reason the artists are so rich is because of merchandising, like shirts and things like that. So, you know, don't feel, you know, I'm not telling you it's okay to pirate music and stuff like that, but don't feel bad about it if you do, because the record company is only getting pissed off. They don't care about the artist, they just want their money. Because the only reason they have the CDs out there is for people to enjoy and to get the band name out there. That's the only reason. So you're not ripping off the band in any way. If you want an artist, support them by buying their merchandise like T-shirts and other junk like that.
I mean, I can see where that's coming from. But I personally still think that it's wrong. But, I mean, I can understand. You know, I mean, it's not having the huge impact that they would like you to think it is. It is taking money away from somebody, but it's not like it's putting someone out on the street, you know?
Exactly. They're trying to make it out like, oh my god, you're not supporting the artist. You support the artist by buying the freaking crap. That's how they make all the money, is from all the merchandise on the CD. So, there. Take that. Put that in your juice box, you stupid record label. Suck it. There you go.
And I guess it's with all this hatred that's going around right now towards Sony that we bring you the weekly hack.
Yeah, so I want to kick this and shove it up Sony's ass by telling you how to defeat their protection software that they have. All it requires is a piece of scotch tape. All you do is take a fingernail size piece of scotch tape, put it on the outside edge of the CD, and what it does is it keeps the CD-ROM from reading the slot, you know, to keep it from installing that rootkit software that they have on the protected CDs. So it sort of just bypasses it and skips it. And there you go, you got an unprotected CD.
So, yeah, that, I mean, I guess that's all there is to it. It's surprisingly simple that you can, you know, a piece of tape can have the impact of, you know, it could determine whether or not your computer is safe from this, you know, from these stupid rootkits.
Kind of scary if you think about it. thing standing from you, standing between your computer being fucked up or not, is a little piece of scotch tape. Kind of crazy. But, I mean, I think that about sums it up for this episode.
Yeah, that should cover about what we have to cover.
Most definitely. This seemed like a short episode for some reason.
It was about, 45 minutes.
Okay, where are we at?
Right now we are at 44 minutes and 16 seconds.
Oh, right on. Damn. It doesn't seem like that long, then.
No, it really doesn't.
Well, see, I always have fun, so it doesn't seem like that long. Aww. So, on that note, I guess we are out of here.
Yeah, oh, I want to give a shout to I Am Sam for putting together that Blacklisted meeting, and shouts to Zach Blackstone, the editor of Blacklisted 411, for all the fun magazines that he sends to me and to the Hack Duluth group.
Well, thanks to all those people. Not sure exactly, you know, never met them personally or talked to them, but thank you anyway. And thanks to all the listeners for listening to us and our ranting about how Sony sucks big. And I believe I'm out of here, Pony Boy.
Alright, this has been Pony Boy.
And this has been Mesa.
So until next time, keep hacking, keep freaking, and keep having fun.
And take a pull of Sony's ass.
Yeah, exactly. In the file.
All right.